Yeah, Luis, excuse me. I'm not ignoring you. I've got a meeting at 9. I'm not ignoring you. I got to get at this meeting
Oh,
going at
no
9.
problem. You got that potential or whatever?
No, this is the RFQs for Fisher's Peak impact study.
Yeah, I got my kid out of the car here and get her on the call.
Okay.
Hey, guys.
See you.
Morning.
Good morning. Now I can hear you. I got my speaker on.
Okay.
I'm Phil with Los Angeles County.
Hi, Phil. I'm Amy. It's nice to virtually meet you. Hey, Sean.
Hi, good morning.
Come on in.
Good morning, everyone.
Hello, Mike. I'm Amy. Nice to meet you.
Same here. Mike with the City of Trinidad.
So we know Jared Chatterley. We worked with him on the Outdoor Rec Atlas work that we did with Main Street. He's the Parks and Rec Director in the city, right?
He's actually our, we created a new position, outdoor recreation director. So with everything going on, we've brought him over from Raton. I'm sorry that you worked with it. No, I'm kidding.
No, no, he great. Seems perfect for that position. That's really cool.
Yeah, it is. He's hit the ground running, so that's good.
Fantastic. Yeah, no, I know Raton was sad. Yeah. It seems like he's doing really good work there. So
yeah.
Fantastic. So I know we have a couple more. Will and Liza should be joining us. Let me make sure. See, there's Will. Hey, Will.
Howdy. Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
Morning.
Good to meet you all today.
Yeah. this is how we do this now, right?
Yeah, it's odd, is it not? I mean, I guess I'm kind of used to it, but I don't ever really want to get completely used to it.
Mm-mm. Right. No. Well, then there's still like the weird awkwardness when like we meet in person and we find out like what the bottom half, like how tall everyone is. Like
there was that's a really good point, Amy. There was a very entertaining article about that I read a month ago talking about like you meet me because I'm loud, I'm extroverted, and I tend to even try to be animated on Zoom. People are usually surprised, like, oh, you're not like 6'5". I'm like, nope, I'm 7. I talk above my weight class, I guess, but it's funny just how people can get kind of like, you know, thrown off by that. But, you know, I can tell, you know, that size matters not, you know, just based on the background behind you. Well, obviously we're waiting for everyone else, but, you know, good to meet you both this morning. I'm Wade Shelton. I'm a senior project manager with the Trust for Public Land.
Very good to meet you.
Good to meet you, Wade.
Looks like we've got everybody. Maybe my Brady Bunch screen was taking a while to catch up.
Well, and I think we do have Liza from our team joining this morning too. I may just shoot her a quick message to make sure she's got everything she needs. Let's see here. Okay. Hello, Matthew. Nice to meet you.
Good morning, everybody. I guess I'll just go ahead. I'm Matt Moorhead with the Nature Conservancy. I've been working in conservation issues, mostly with private ranching lands in the Trinidad area for a couple of decades, but have been pretty deeply involved for the last four years now, four plus years now, in all things Fisher's Peak and Trinidad.
Very cool. Not a bad thing to be really heavily involved in for several years.
it's been a ride for sure.
Cool. Well, I think I'd say let's go ahead and get started. We wanted to have Liza join just to answer questions, but I'll mainly be jumping in and sharing our presentation to begin with. So Phil, I don't know, is there anything we want to touch on before we jump in?
No, I don't believe so. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm going to let's see. Can you make it so I can share my screen?
I will attempt that. I don't want to get fans of this. Did that do it?
Yes, success. All right. So can everyone see here, and I'll make this. Let's see, no, I want to do view and full screen. Okay. Can everyone see my screen okay? Great. All right. Well, we really want to thank the city, the county, Nature Conservancy, Trust for Public Land, you know, for this opportunity. We're really excited about the prospect of this project. And that's really kind of the crux of the presentation that we wanted to give is really why, you know, we would be just so thrilled to get to work on this with you. But I'm going to let my team introduce ourselves, talk very briefly about our role in the project, what it would be. And so I'm Amy Bell. I'm principal landscape architect with Groundwork Studio. I would be the principal in charge for the project, your primary point of contact, and also responsible for leadership of community engagement and planning related to connecting recreational assets to downtown. And I'll pass it over. Let's see. Pass it over to Will.
Hi. My name is Will Moses, also with Groundwork Studio, landscape architect. I'd be here primarily to kind of support Amy. I've been working on a couple of outdoor recreation master plans for a couple different entities for a little while now, working with New Mexico State Parks right now, working with the village of Ruidoso here. So I'm here to assist in any way that I can.
And Sean.
Hi, everyone. My name is Sean O'Shea, and I'm the president and lead consultant for a firm called Hatchform. And we concentrate on the economic development side. And so I've been involved in economic development for over 10 years now. Started up in Fairbanks, Alaska, where I was the project manager for the Fairbanks Economic Development Corporation, and then moved to New Mexico to work more on the entrepreneur development side, worked for the Santa Fe Business Incubator for a while. I'll be working on this project on the on that economic development side, analysis, feasibility, market studies, and data capture.
Yeah, and Sean and our team, we get to work together through our work with New Mexico Main Street. We're both consultants that are part of the revitalization specialist team. And Sean is the small business entrepreneur focus, and we're the landscape architecture and planning focus, providing technical assistance to the Main Street communities and in New Mexico. So we're really familiar, you know, with Raton. And I think, you know, sort of by extension, you know, that part of the state, which is really spectacular. So why are we so excited about this project? And I think in a nutshell, you know, we're really excited about the benefits that it could bring to the people and the environment, you know, in Los Animas County, Trinidad, Fisher's Peak State Park, and the surrounding region. We know that outdoor recreation development can do a lot of really great things. You know, it can support local asset-based economic development, which builds from the strengths that exist within an area or community. We know it can strengthen local values and identity, celebrating history and character that's so often closely tied to the natural resources of an area. And we know that, you know, mining is a big deal in this part of Colorado. It can improve health outcomes by increasing access to active transportation and time spent outdoors being active. And through that improved access, it can also address issues related to equity and inclusion. One of the things that we talked a lot about with our Outdoor Rec Atlas communities was the importance of going beyond making these outdoor activities accessible and making them approachable. So there's an easy entrance point, right? And it's something that anyone in the community can afford and feel comfortable doing, and that improves their quality of life. It can build stewardship, you know, citizenry who care about their surroundings and want to manage them in a responsible way. We see this as especially important for youth growing up in these communities and for keeping that youth and talent within the community. We know outdoor rec development can often be easily and quickly implemented, you know, unlike a major streetscape renovation, and have a really catalytic effect. Like, we know trails, for example, are a relatively low cost investment for a potentially very high return in health benefits and economic development. So it's inspiring for us to think about how this work could be so beneficial, you know, both for this gateway community, but also as an example, you know, for other gateway communities in the region that are looking at very similar issues. So we know that Outdoor Rec can do all these great things if it's done in a particular way, right? So local business and entrepreneurship related to outdoor recreation has got to be encouraged. We hear a lot about how folks want to start their outdoor adventure at the coffee shop and end at the brewery, right? So when we connect outdoor activities with local businesses, we create a memorable experience while supporting the local economy. Businesses related to outdoor activities, too, whether it's tour guiding or equipment supply or manufacture, are also really important to consider how that all ties in. Obviously, you know, appropriate infrastructure has got to be in place, roads, parking that support the projected traffic related to visitation, utilities, emergency services, you know, and maybe even reservation systems to limit visitation to appropriate numbers. This is something that we saw in the village of Ruidoso. They developed something like that in response to their Grindstone Lake facility being like completely overrun during the pandemic. Local communities, and we say communities plural, because we understand that there's diverse cultures and histories represented within the county and the region, made up of people that may identify with one or more communities, right? It's critical that our process connect with these diverse groups so that different perspectives are heard and addressed. We talk about this a lot with our Main Street communities who want more tourism, you know, this kind of development, has got to put locals and residents first, right? Because if outdoor recreation is accessible and approachable first to the local community, it creates a situation where, you know, people want to come visit and be a part of that, but tourism is less likely to be exploitative if it's set up that way. Connectivity is key. This can be physical, like with a trail, like was talked about in the RFP, having a trail, a physical connection between downtown Trinidad and the state park. But it also can be conceptual or ideological, right? Through branding, wayfinding, you know, other ways to tie into, you know, outdoor recreation and natural resources. Collaboration, communication is so important for success. This is one of the things that we think is so cool about this partnership between the city, the county, TNC, TPL, Colorado Parks and Wildlife, and GoCo. Like, you're already all working together, which is amazing and, you know, so important for avoiding duplication of work. You know, where individually we may have limited resources as a team, you know, there's just a ton that we can do. And we all know that we have to balance access with conservation, right? You know, again, sort of going back to, you know, how much access is appropriate, you know, to protect these ecologies. You know, this project is such a fantastic opportunity to provide a large area of contiguous critical habitat for wildlife, with Sugar Creek Canyon State Park to the south, across the border. In our work again with Ruidoso, as they've pushed access into their more wild environments, they're experiencing issues with wildlife in town, right? Elk and horses in their ball fields, because they're being pushed out of their natural habitat. So we wanna provide enough access for people to enjoy and be curious about natural environments without compromising the integrity of those important ecologies. And understanding conflicting and complementary uses is also a really important part of this balance. And we appreciate the opportunity with this project to help the county and the city identify those recreational needs that may need to be met outside the state park. We thought that was a really cool part of the scope. So this all sounds great, right? But how will our team, why us, how will we help you achieve these things with this plan? So our team is well known for our outside the box, authentic and interactive community and local business engagement. We look for ways to reach those who may have conventionally been left out of the planning process, whether it's through community mapping, citizen science activities, giant chalkboard installations, pop-up playgrounds, you know, partnerships with local businesses or participating in local events. We try to go to the community instead of requiring them to come to us and create activities in which community members can, you know, see the tangible outcomes of their input. So we'll also apply lessons learned from other gateway communities in the region. There's a lot of other communities going through similar process right now. And we have a great start on this from our ongoing communication with the Outdoor Rec, you know, pilot study counties and the Gateway and Natural Amenity Region Initiative out of Utah State that was part of that study as well. Our most successful projects involve coordination between multiple agencies, you know, like we're doing here, whether it's working with local governments and Main Street organizations, Department of Transportation, Historic Preservation Office, you know, the local water utility authority, city, schools, you know, it's the more partners we have, the more, you know, successful we usually are if we're all, you know, working together. We've worked with both TPL and the Nature Conservancy previously on a few projects, including the City of Albuquerque's 10-minute walk to park study, development of their nature play guidelines, and consultation on the New Mexico climate ready trees list. And then finally, you know, we understand the importance of all of this work resulting in realistic and implementable recommendations that are also adaptable for different future scenarios. So many of our previous planning efforts have been structured in an adaptive format. So sort of if this is the situation, then this is the recommendation, which allows for, you know, easy access to connecting those recommendations to particular, you know, scenarios. So with that, I'd like to hear your all's questions and see if we can answer them.
You had mentioned that Sean had mentioned that he has experience in economic impact study. Can he elaborate a bit on exactly what he has and hasn't done? Because a major part of this study will be both opportunities and challenges, I guess is how I would verbalize it, when it comes to economic impacts.
Sure. So I've worked both mostly in New Mexico, some in Alaska, and some for tribal nations. On looking at one, what are the opportunities for, you know, various investment that they might make or for kind of natural assets they might have? How can those be developed? And then looking at one, you know, what's the highest and best use of the of that parcel of land or that asset? But then also, especially now, you know, because we know that things can get upended so quickly, what are some various scenarios that we can look at and sort of try and visualize to say, okay, if this happens, then how is that going to impact the viability or, you know, the access or the chance to get some sort of economic development return off of the asset? And just trying to mitigate the really deleterious effects of those various, you know, scenarios as they come into play. You know, specifically, we did, when I was with the Fairbanks Economic Development Corporation, we were involved in a big project to try and get natural gas from the North Slope down to Fairbanks. And so we looked at a lot of different ways in which we could do that and how that would impact, obviously, the natural environment coming down from the North Slope through sort of some of the, you know, most pristine country in the U.S. And then, you know, how that would impact and benefit the people of Fairbanks, right? What was the real economic case for that? And for in that instance, I don't want to take up too much time, but for in that instance, right, like Fairbanks pays an extraordinary amount of money in heating costs, because essentially they burn diesel fuel for heat for the most part, right? And those that burn wood or burn large amounts of wood for heating, there's a real air quality issue, right? PM 2.5 gets really high, and so high that the federal government at one point was stepping in saying, you really have to reduce your PM 2.5 emissions. And a large part of that was through coal and wood burning. So, you know, how do we reduce the heating costs to the point where people can afford to live in Fairbanks, but also be mindful of the implications that would have on the environment? And so that was, you know, one point. And that's, you know, we spent, you know, years on that. And it's still actually in the works, right? They just designed a new utility and have got that working there. And smaller scale instances would be, you know, there's a plot of land that three land grants have bought up by Ghost Ranch here in New Mexico. What is the best organization for the business structure for that? Like, how are those three land grants going to organize themselves and actually make something like this work? And then what is the best use of that land so that they can generate some revenue that they can put back into their communities to try and, you know, improve economic conditions for the people that they serve?
Thank you.
So this is Mike. Just wondering what do the deliverables look like on a project like this? What do you give to us? Something to put on the shelf with all the other studies, or what do we get out of this? What does it look like?
It's a really great question, Mike, because I think that that's something that we've been trying really hard to figure out, you know, and I think Sean has some interesting new, you know, sort of frameworks for how, like, the deliverables that we give you in terms of, you know, documenting the planning process, but also giving you something that you can use, right? Not just a plan that goes on the shelf. And so we've started with the majority of our planning projects, making sure that we have, you know, a project website or a story map that's accessible to the public that makes the plan available. The other thing, you know, kind of going back to the adaptive management planning format, is sort of setting up the plans so that you can go right in and say, okay, here's my situation. I'm going to click on this, you know, link in the document, and it's going to take me right to the recommendation or, you know, scenario description that applies to my particular situation. An example of that is our the state forestry community forestry management plan that we put together, which was very much like, this is my situation. What's the recommendation related to it? Similarly, we also set up the Metropolitan Redevelopment Area Implementation Toolkit for New Mexico that way as well. Another example would be with our International District Urban Agriculture Plan. That was a plan that I think, you know, there may be some similarities here in terms of trying things on the ground to understand what the challenges are and what the solutions are. So with that project, we literally did urban garden design and implementation with multiple different groups to try to understand how to, you know, overcome some of the hurdles to urban agriculture in Albuquerque. And what resulted from that, you know, wasn't just a plan document, but was also like a working group that still meets and works together to pursue grants. You know, and there were actual projects that were implemented. And so, you know, I can see us, you know, I think we would want to work with you guys very closely at the beginning of the project to figure out, you know, what deliverables are going to be most useful for you all moving forward. And then create a scope that's going to give you, you know, what you need to, you know, because again, like, plans aren't useful unless you can do something with them. So it's really the outcomes and the projects and the things that happen because of this planning process, the capacity that's built during the planning process, you know, that we're going to want to really focus on. If that makes sense, does that make sense?
It did. Thank you.
I'm conscious of the time here, so you know, just. If you could share, you mentioned work with Metone in the past, and of course that's with the closest approximation to sort of this larger area, larger community. Can you give us a little bit of a big picture about what it was you did with Metone?
Sure, yeah. So we've worked with Metone for the past, I want to say, five years, sort of first helping manage their Great Blocks project, which is there right by the rail depot. So the Great Blocks program with New Mexico Main Street is the idea that you improve, you know, 2 to 3 blocks of downtown public infrastructure, improve the streetscape, make it, you know, safer for pedestrians, more comfortable for people, you know, and that's going to have a catalytic effect on private investment and people, you know, stopping and shopping and spending money and enjoying being downtown as a place. You guys are probably familiar that project has now been built. It's pretty exciting. And as kind of a building from that, when was this? I think it was in 2018, we had our Main Street conference there, and the focus was on creative placemaking. And so, you know, again, sort of instead of sitting in the conference room talking about creative placemaking, we got out and we painted the 3D floating crosswalk out there and built planter boxes and benches and did a bunch of, we painted footprints from the rail depot to the local businesses. Just in like temporary, like tempera paint, you know, to see how it went. But the city manager and you know, community development director there, you know, they liked it so much. They were like, let's make it permanent. Like, this is so cool. It's actually increasing visitation, you know, to our local businesses. So that's the work that I've done. Sean, have you worked with Metone on other projects as well?
I worked a little bit with their Center for Community Innovation. That I think has some, was doing some work also in Trinidad, sort of a cross-border arts and cultural collaboration. Yeah, so that's kind of my experience with in Metone.
And then, more recently with the Outdoor Recreation Atlas that we completed, that was with Colfax County was one of the counties. So we worked with folks in Metone and Jared as well. He participated, even though he's technically in Trinidad. He's really familiar with a lot of the outdoor rec assets in the area. So he was a great, you know, contribution to the team. So we mapped, you know, as much of the outdoor rec assets within Colfax County as we could figure out as part of that project, and as well as understanding the potential, you know, potential projects. That was what that outdoor rec atlas did, was like, let's map all the existing assets, let's look at potential projects, and then figure out what are the projects that should be prioritized in terms of connecting these outdoor rec assets to downtown. So the project that was highlighted for Raton was wayfinding, because Raton's doing a wayfinding project downtown, but it was like, well, we need to do wayfinding between Raton and Sugar Eat Park, right? So that people know how to get there. And is there a trail project that we could look at? So.
And, you know, noting we only have a couple minutes left, you kind of answered my question already, but if you want to add to it, you can. Pretty much everybody hit on this pretty well already. The whole point of this study is to have implementable results. This is what we know, what kind of investments we need to make in infrastructure in southeastern Colorado so that Trinidad and the county can make the most hay, so to speak, out of having a new state park and everything else that's coming online. So making sure when we're done that we're in a good position to secure public funding, you know, from the regional level, from the state level, from the federal level, especially with some of the stimulus, you know, reinvestment money that might be coming. You know, any other examples you guys can give in a minute of where your work, you know, lined up your municipal partners for, you know, being able to hit the ground running to get secure the matching dollars they need to actually implement the plan.
Great. Yeah. I think, you know, the Outdoor Recreation Atlas, I think, was a really great example of that, because we were looking at projects that specifically complied with both the state Outdoor Rec Division grant funds, as well as the Land and Water Conservation funds. And I would just say too, that pretty much like all of the design projects and planning really that we do with our Main Street communities specifically lines them up to get funding. So there's, in New Mexico, there's a state capital outlay that's Main Street specific. And so we tailor all of our, you know, design and planning deliverables. There's also, you know, a planning fund. So if we do a metropolitan redevelopment area designation, that sets the community up to then get their matching grant from the New Mexico Finance Authority to do their MRA plan. Similarly, you know, if we give them a design plan and a cost estimate, it gives them all of the information that they need to go to the state legislature and say, here's our project, here's how much it's going to cost, here's all the great benefits of it. You know, and we've had really, I mean, it's been really, really cool to see that progression. I mean, I think we know it can take a few years to get there just because of the time frame of these things. But we've seen several projects that have been built, you know, in the 6 years that we've been working with Main Street communities that we started designing, you know, a few years back. Will, do you have any other ones you want to add?
Yeah, I was gonna mention Cayunas River Park, which is a project that we're working on in Las Vegas, New Mexico. And, you know, keeping an eye on the time, I'll just say that that community doesn't have the funds. It's a 2 mile park that we designed along the Cayunas River. That community doesn't have the funding to build everything in one big chunk. So what we've done is we've broken it up into smaller, manageable pieces for them that they can then take and pursue. They're a little bit more in line with the kind of funding that they're able to get. And we've taken a look at sort of construction sequencing and where things, you know, what's the best thing to build first to get the biggest impact, to get the community behind it, in order to build that excitement that can then be leveraged to get additional funding for additional phases on down the line. And so we look at sort of that big impact for the public. And we also look at sort of the nuts and bolts of the project of, from a construction sequencing perspective, what needs to be built first in order for everything else to kind of come online seamlessly afterward. So I would just mention that one.
And I think I want to just say too, we are familiar with the GoCo grants. That's something we worked with Bayfield on multiple projects, and then, you know, ended up phasing their, you know, Pine River Corridor parks plan based on GoCo grant amounts, so that they, you know, had kind of a, you know, 5 to 10 year plan of how they were going to get that big project done. New Mexico needs a grant program like that. Just, we're jealous.
Okay, well, thank you for your time and your team's time, and I apologize for dumping us in your guys' lap at such a short notice.
Well, we appreciate the opportunity. Thank you so much. It was wonderful to meet you all, and hope we have the chance to work together.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you for your time.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye, folks.